Hi, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of The Progressive Bitcoiner. I'm your host, Trey Walsh, and today we have on the show Marcel Lorrain, the CEO and founder of Bitcoin Dada. This was such a great conversation and one of my favorite things to focus on, which is Bitcoin adoption in the Global South and Bitcoin for communities that really need it and want to use it in a peer-to-peer way. And that's exactly what we focused on in this conversation. Now, Bitcoin Dada is creating a safe space for African women to learn about Bitcoin while being a part of a women-focused community that wants her to succeed. So Bitcoin Dada focuses specifically on women and engaging women in Africa, in Kenya, in Uganda, and continuing to expand, as we talked about in this conversation, really engaging them in Bitcoin and a part of financial conversations, economic conversations, in ways that oftentimes women don't feel the most comfortable in these environments to talk about it, aren't given opportunities to work in these types of fields or hold assets and these kind of things. And, you know, we talked about how Bitcoin is one of the most, if not the most, inclusive money and community that one can be a part of. It's permissionless, it's borderless. Anyone can join in and jump in and learn about Bitcoin. So this was just such a fantastic conversation. And Marcel is such a visionary, you know, her marketing and events background, she's really grown Bitcoin Dada into something really, really incredible. So please, you know, check out the show notes and check out the links to support Bitcoin Dada, donate whatever sats you can to their cause to help them continue to expand. They also look for mentor volunteers, so you can check out that, and all of their resources are on their website. And really just want to make sure to amplify stories like this that we really believe in, because this is why Bitcoin exists, right? To present empowerment, and money and opportunities to those that really need it. And what better cause than supporting women and local communities in Kenya, in Uganda, throughout the Global South, so that they can take control of their financial future. And, you know, we talked about conversations like, you know, Alex Gladstein saying, check your financial privilege. And that's something that I really want for our Western listeners and those that kind of stumble into the podcast to learn, you know, check your financial privilege when thinking about Bitcoin, when saying, you know, Bitcoin is useless or for criminals or, you know, it's killing the environment, all of these different things that we hear constantly from the West. Just remember, you know, if you don't see a use case for Bitcoin, someone else does. And, you know, don't step on their opportunity to take advantage of that. So we talked about all of this and so much more in this conversation. And I want to thank Marcel for taking time out of her super busy schedule running Bitcoin Dada to do this conversation. And be sure to follow her on social media as well. And all of those links will be in our show notes. But anyway, I want to hear from you all about this conversation or any others. You can always reach out to me at hello@progressivebitcoiner.com. And be sure to subscribe to our Substack, progressivebitcoiner.substack.com, for our free weekly newsletters. And at this point, we've also started our TPB live shows, where we break down news and such from the week with the TPB team, as well as special guests. We do that on a bi-weekly basis right now, so every other Friday. So be sure to be on the lookout for that as we're continuing to expand and grow and want to present more and more opportunities and more content for our listeners, and thanks to your support. And be sure to check out our promo links as well to Bitbox and Saz Mining to take advantage of those discount codes in our show notes as well. And thank you all for your incredible support and following us and sharing our shows with people that you think really need to hear them. I really, really, really appreciate it. And as always, if you can, you know, like and subscribe on our YouTube channel, wherever you listen to your pods, that's going to help us amplify our shows and make us easier to search for people and things like that. So thank you all so much for listening and supporting. All right, I will let you get to the conversation now, and we will see you again next week. Hello, Marcel, and welcome to The Progressive Bitcoiner. How are you?
Hi, I'm well. And you?
Doing well. Doing well. Morning here, afternoon, busy times for you all over there, but super excited to have you on our show and having this conversation. For those that don't know who Bitcoin Dada is and who you are, do you want to introduce yourself? Say a little bit about, you know, yourself, your background, and what you do.
So my name is Marcel Lorrain. I am the founder of Bitcoin Dada. So essentially what Bitcoin Dada is, it's an educational platform, or a community rather, where African females can come and learn about Bitcoin and as well learn about financial literacy as well. A little bit about myself. I did banking and finance in campus. And then I left the corporate world in search of greener pastures in the entrepreneur world. So I started my own businesses, but the major one was the events company. Because I went back, essentially I went back to school, did events management, and then opened my own company called Loris Events, which consults for both corporate and social events. So I would say I'm more entrepreneurial, right? And so that's a bit about myself.
And in terms of Bitcoin Dada, like what would you say is kind of the mission and the core of what you all are trying to do with Bitcoin Dada? And about when did Bitcoin Dada start?
Okay, so with the main thing that we're trying to do with Bitcoin Dada is to empower the African females, again, through financial literacy. And the reason why we do this is because as African females, there are a lot of challenges and barriers that we face stemming from societal beliefs or traditional beliefs that are holding us back. So for me, Bitcoin is, I consider it as a currency of change. So it's a tool that we use to liberate not only ourselves, but the entire African continent. Bitcoin Dada, I started Bitcoin Dada back in May 2022. That was immediately, I think that was after the COVID-19 pandemic. So as an events organizer, I was called to actually organize a Bitcoiners event here in Kenya. So that was the first Bitcoiners event after the COVID-19. So it was at this particular event that I got to learn and understand better about Bitcoin. And in my mind, I was thinking, if Bitcoin is such an amazing technology, then how comes we do not have the majority of the population in Africa who happens to be females not participating? Because it doesn't make sense that we as African females run the households. You know, the African continent is set up in a matriarchal, is actually run on a matriarchal structure, right? So that means the transactions, the small businesses, you know, the ones taking care of the families are the females. So if this particular technology that is revolutionizing the world is out there, then why leave the African female behind? So that was my thought back then. And I was like, something needs to be done, you know, either complain about it or just do something about it. So I came up with Bitcoin Dada, which Dada essentially means sisters. And my purpose was to create a community. Again, a community where females can come, feel comfortable, feel safe in a space where they can share about their success stories, they can share about their challenges, their experiences, and at the same time learn how they can actually be better, to break some of the challenges or the cycles that normally happen with us here.
All right. So, you know, you were talking about kind of creating spaces for women in Kenya for, you know, different financial tech and things like this, like these kind of conversations. Can you tell folks a little bit more about why you feel that was really, really, really important in the context of mission of Bitcoin Dada?
We normally face a lot of barriers when it comes to the tech space and financial space and even basic education. In the African context, the female is not really, valued, or rather the female is considered another person's problem, right? So in a scenario where the resources are scarce, then the male counterpart or the male partner will actually get more resources or privileges, right? So this stems from actually our childhood. And the majority of the African families, most of them are poor, right? They're struggling to, you know, live on a day-to-day basis. So when it comes to education, again, the male is actually considered, is actually given the first priority. So by the time a woman is actually of age to get a job opportunity or career, they lack in terms of education, better education. So that means they're actually getting poor job opportunities or low paying job opportunities. The other thing I would say in that the tech spaces, whether it's Africa or worldwide, even in the financial space, it has always been male dominated, right? It has always been male dominated for several reasons. And for me, I felt, or I feel that for the longest time, we have, as females, we have tried to, you know, point out this issue, and not many of us are actually doing something about it. So I felt like it's either continue being part of that group that complains and actually do nothing, because no one essentially is coming to save us, right? So I felt like it's time for change. It's time for something to happen. And I really don't blame the males, because that's how the world is. I mean, that is, they were born into that system as well. So it's just like they're taking up the baton and continue with the journey as it is. So for me, Bitcoin Dada is essentially trying to create an impact and create create a change within the society and show the world that even females can actually do something. Females can create impacts, you know. And one of the things that I realized, especially with finances, people don't notice how having a family or having a community, a society that depends on one particular gender sort of puts strain on resources, right? So you're having a population where already they are struggling to live, yet with the scarce resources, it's being like overused, right? So that ensures, or that make it feel like the cycle of poverty will continue from generation to generation. And if something that I can point out, other than lack of education, lack of job opportunities, and every other thing that you can think of, early child marriages and all that, something that I would say is, sorry, I lost my train of thoughts.
Yeah, it's okay.
I completely lost my train of thoughts. What were you thinking about?
It's because you have so much going on and so much good stuff going on. That's why. So that's totally normal. You were talking about, I think it's a really interesting concept. You were talking about like strained resources and how like if you just have kind of one gender that is responsible for certain things in society, right? How that can be a strain on resources and what that can do to a society.
So eventually what you'll see in that particular society again is poverty with every generation that comes. And to make matters worse, with African belief, females are not actually allowed to inherit property. Mm-hmm. So whether you come from a good family or whether you come from a poor background, then you essentially remain in the same state, right? Mm-hmm. And worse, if you actually have kids. So that means your kids will inherit poverty from you, right? Mm-hmm. And I wish as Africans, we'll actually see it from a bigger picture and not just as the female child, but the greater community as well. Because for me, the way I think of is if you have an empowered girl child, then essentially you're bringing in more resources to the families. You're bringing in more resources to the community. So we are able to see better access to education for all genders. We are able to see better healthcare for everyone at home. We are able to see even the surrounding community living a better life, right? And from that, we'll be able to see a better economy within that particular society. So with Bitcoin being it being permissionless, essentially that is what I'm trying to do, you know, create financial empowerment by using Bitcoin, because Bitcoin essentially is permissionless. The females do not require permission to actually use it. It's completely decentralized. It's open source. So whoever wants to build on it, if there's a problem, then they actually create a solution and run with it. The other beautiful thing about Bitcoin is we as Africans can create solutions for Africa, right? Mm-hmm. So, and why we need the African female in this space is because we need to also share our voices out there. So we have the builders, and the majority of the users of these fintech products are females as well. So you need to have the voices as well. You need to hear the voices being shared out there.
One of the things that I love when talking about Bitcoin and telling Bitcoin stories and things we try to get across through this podcast is like, you know, Bitcoin is one thing, like Bitcoin, the tech, the protocol, money, all of this, like really, really amazing in and of itself. But what Bitcoin does is it really like unleashes like a new path for people, a new purpose. It's all of these second and third order effects after Bitcoin that it does. So have you seen that with some of the women you're working with, where they, maybe they come in, they're kind of curious. They're like, okay, you know, what is this about? My friend told me about it, or I saw something about it. And then they just, it completely transformed them, their lives. So maybe not like, yes, Bitcoin can be transformative because they have better savings, they have stuff to work on, this and that. But, you know, it's this probably sense of community, of meeting other people, of connecting with other people, of feeling more empowered. You know, do you have examples of how you've seen that happen with your groups?
Absolutely. I would actually start with myself. Essentially, or when I joined the crypto space, I'll say crypto space because I got into the crypto space because I didn't have a mentor. So like every other person, I was just trying to make an extra buck. I didn't know how these things work. And back then, there was not a lot of genuine materials online that you could learn by yourself. So having that fiat mentality made me want to make more for myself, right? It was sort of like a selfish drive that I had. But the more I got into the Bitcoin rabbit hole, I started seeing the world on a different level. It wasn't me against the next person. It was me, or essentially us, this particular group, against the corrupt leaders that we have. So it went from race, it went from being better than your neighbor, it went from being better than the next person to actually trying to be part of the larger community that's trying to revolutionize how the system, the entire monetary system works, right? By ensuring that freedom is given back to the rightful owners, which is us, right? So for my community, I have seen ladies expanding their businesses. You know, they came in with a small mindset that, you know, my business can only be run in a certain particular region, let's say, for example, Nairobi. And with Bitcoin now, they realize that their businesses can be run globally, right? I have a very good example of that. Her name is Sarah. She has, or rather, she runs a herbal shop. When she was joining Bitcoin Dada, she only had like one small shop. And I remember the reason why she joined Bitcoin Dada is because she was trying to import certain products into the country. And her client, who was in Nigeria, had requested to pay her in Bitcoin because the exchange fee was high. And then I believe her client had like some certain limitations on her bank transfers. So she had opted to pay my student in Bitcoin, but my student didn't actually know how to use Bitcoin. So she lost that particular business because of that. So when she joined Bitcoin Dada, she had heard that Bitcoin could save her or could help her expand her business because she would be able to freely, you know, do transactions across, just but being borderless, right? Yeah. So right now, she has already graduated and she has been using Bitcoin in her business. And currently, I can say she has opened three other shops. She has expanded because now she's able to actually make transactions with other people, not within Kenya. I've seen her grow from just a small business to now having other branches of her business. I would also say the other impact that I've seen with Bitcoin in my community is ladies trying to create opportunities for themselves, career opportunities for themselves as well, which is very important for us as African females, because again, like most of the, like what I said, we do not get the high or cream de la cream type of jobs, right? Because of already what we are going through as we grow up, right? But with Bitcoin, as long as you have a skill and you can show proof of work, then you can actually be paid. And it doesn't have to be paid by somebody or an organization that is in Africa. It can be anywhere globally. And we have been able to see that with some of our students as well. So I'm really happy that Satoshi did what he did and created Bitcoin.
Yeah, that's amazing. And that's probably just the tip of the iceberg too. And what's interesting is obviously the continent of Africa is massive, right? But then you have kind of these regional approaches where in the United States, like we make cross-border payments to states all the time, you know, of a country of 375 million, whatever it is, right? So, you know, this concept is a bit foreign, but just that practical application, is like there's so many folks in the West that don't understand these practical applications, where in the States it doesn't even come up, right? There's other reasons to be into Bitcoin in the States and plenty, but just that practical application of like, it was easier to accept business. I think that's another thing, like besides like the mission driven of Bitcoin, the, you know, separate money from the state, all of these things that some people might be like, ah, that's kind of like too political for me, or that's too, you know, anti-government for me, or whatever the case may be, right? Strong arguments there. But you're talking about a practical solution of someone's like, I'm able to run a business better. And that's what I hope can really click for people like worldwide, is like, no, Bitcoin like works better. It's like borderless, lower fees, no fees, depending on how you use it, or virtually no fees. Yeah, fast. All of these different things. Just these practical solutions. It's like, no, there are so many different layers and levels to why Bitcoin is appealing. So seeing those use cases of what you're saying is really, really cool, that I cannot wait to just see more of, because then I think that might click for people in a new way. Is like, if we make Bitcoin to where they want to use it, it's easy to use, it has these practical applications, I mean, why not use it? They'll be like, I don't care what it is, call it Bitcoin, call it whatever, that sounds better to me. Those are the stories that like we keep telling would be fantastic for adoption, I think.
And I think to add on that, I would say the West especially, of course there are some other individual characters in Africa as well, but I would say the West especially need to be more empathetic and need to be more understanding to other people, especially the Global South, you know, instead of trying to push their own opinion or their own way of thinking onto others on how Bitcoin can be used or should be used, is the best they can do is, even if they don't understand, is support or just keep quiet, you know. Yeah. How I use or perceive Bitcoin might not be the same as you perceive it. You know, if it works best as a store of value for you, well and good, you know.
Yeah.
If it works best for me as a peer-to-peer transaction, I mean, that was the reason it was created in the first place, you know. Well and good, you know. We need to understand each other from where we are coming from. We do not have the same backgrounds. We do not have the same challenges. So it's very important as humans that we give people a chance on how they can use this tool to their benefit.
Yeah. And that's why I like to lead with talking about, it's funny, a lot of my friends started to understand Bitcoin because I talked about Bitcoin and human rights so much, like kind of my group of friends. So they got that. The second part was they were like, well, like, how does it work? So then I had to talk about the fundamentals after, rather than the other way around, because, you know, my group of friends, or whether it's like, you know, progressives and stuff like that in the US, they're hearing all the environmental stuff. They're hearing Bitcoin's for terrorists. They're hearing it's useless and like, why does it exist? Like, it doesn't need to exist. Then telling stories like what you're describing, I'm like, listen, I don't care whether you, like, you're in the West and you use it or not. I don't care. But unfortunately, and you learn more about this as you learn about Bitcoin and money and the global financial system and all of these, like, you know, currency imperialism throughout Africa from Europe. It's like, even if you don't care about it, okay. But what the US does policy-wise, the way we talk about things, the way we do things in the US, has ripple effects through the rest of the world. And other governments might adopt similar policies, or the US might impose certain sanctions or do other things that, you know, kind of threaten other nations to have certain more restrictive policies. Like, God forbid, say someone can't self-custody and spend Bitcoin in Kenya, right? Something like that. So I'm not one of those fear mongers that think that's like coming tomorrow, but those are conversations we have to have, and that I keep wanting to preach about in the States, especially, and throughout Europe, is, listen, if you don't see a use case for it, that's fine. But don't impact, like you're saying, for other people that really could use it and need it and value it. Just live and let live when it comes to Bitcoin. If you don't want to use it, fine. Like, we're not going to make you. It's permissionless, but it's not forced. I think it's really important as well.
Exactly. And can you imagine? So the other day we had a conversation within the community, and we're looking at how different currencies are behaving in Africa. And we looked at Malawi, who had like a 40% depreciation last year. Recently, we had Nigeria over 30%. And we're trying to look at where the current the Kenya currency is. And we just realized between 2021 and 2024, we had like a 51% devaluation of our currency. So wow. ours might not be like really on a free fall like the Nigerian Naira or mm-hmm. the Malawi shilling or whatever it is, but we still headed there. So you can imagine if someone has been saving their wealth in Bitcoin since 2021, then that mm-hmm. means they have lost 51% of their labor, of their time and their resources, right? So for someone like that, if you introduce them, or if they come across Bitcoin, then definitely, they will definitely see Bitcoin as a better store of value, right? Mm-hmm. So yeah, again, we have different challenges coming from different continents and different countries. And yeah, like you said, we need to allow people to use Bitcoin as how it will benefit them.
And you said save in Bitcoin, losing 51%. Mm-hmm. You meant to say save in the fiat.
Currency.
Yeah. Someone's like, wait, losing 50. How is that tied to? I thought Bitcoin was different. Bitcoin was not supposed to be for that. I think the listener got what you're saying too. Well, that's why impactful for me in my early Bitcoin journey was what clicked for me, because you know I was like, okay, you know, Bitcoin's kind of this thing for like crypto bros trading. Stocks, it's not really, you know, I work in like nonprofits, like it's not really my thing. But hearing like initially like Alex Gladstein talk about like check for your financial privilege, like that even hearing that line, I was like and then reading the book and then reading, you know, checking in with the first person stories of what he's talking about, because like Alex is a guy from the West, but I think he's done a lot to promote stories of those individuals that I would encourage people to check out those individual stories, talk to those people like I'm doing with you here right now. Yeah. But that concept of like check your financial privilege is just such a like huge thought that more people in the West need to have when thinking about these type of things. I mean, it's not just about Bitcoin, it's about everything. that's when you learn it's far beyond Bitcoin, when like people in the States and the US need to check your financial privilege. But what's interesting is I think what we're seeing is that some people call it going from a unipolar to a multipolar world, like you're seeing other nation states, other groups of people, other communities in the global South, you're seeing kind of this, it used to be the US up here, everyone else here, you're seeing a slow shift in world order. You're seeing some states say, actually, we're going to try our own thing this time. Mm-hmm. Like we're not going to necessarily do everything DC or the World Bank or the IMF wants us to. I think that is a pretty good thing for these previous imperialist nation states to be finding their purpose and calling, and seeing people and communities adopt Bitcoin creates a sense of self-resiliency, I think, and less of a need for these other systems. And the US right now, there's a lot of people in the US that are very oblivious to this. The US is not necessarily continuing on a trajectory of greatness in terms of democracy, in terms of financial freedom. There's a lot of things I'm worried about in the US, but what I'm very, the quote Bitcoiners like to say is bullish on, is like the global South, is communities like Bitcoin Dada, is communities in El Salvador, in Cape Town, in Thailand, wherever. That are really finding their purpose and roots and moving forward, while the US just kind of, I don't know, waits and assumes that it will just continue on the path that it's been. So I am very hopeful and optimistic for, you know, places and things like Bitcoin Dada. That's why for me, I'm kind of like, okay, if the US gets it or doesn't get it, whatever. But the fact that you are getting it and doing things with it, I'm like, then Bitcoin is winning. Like Bitcoin is succeeding with its purpose, I think, in my opinion. And everyone will have a different definition of what Bitcoin's purpose is, but I think it's winning in that regard.
Yeah. And I'll also just mention that it's not just the West who actually are oblivious to the adversaries that are happening. Even here in Africa, I see it in our classes. You know, the ladies, most of the ladies join the classes with different reasons, right? And then they start learning, because our first class is always about money and what's happening in Africa. And Bitcoin, why I love Bitcoin, whether it works or not 100 years from now, I would say Bitcoin is an extraordinary educational tool, right? It has mm-hmm. opened the eyes of so many people to whatever that is happening. For example, so many individuals in Kenya and so many individuals in Africa have been born into this cage, into this system, and they assume that's how the world is supposed to work. You know, mm-hmm. If you're born in a cage, if you're born in prison, then freedom will look funny to you, right?
Yeah.
You will not see the essence of, you will not see the advantage of actually being free. But with a tool such as Bitcoin, actually open your eyes to your rights mm-hmm. as a human, your rights as a citizen, you know, your rights to the taxes that you're actually paying and what needs to be done by your leaders. So mm-hmm. I do appreciate that about Bitcoin. And I'm hoping to see more, like you said, more initiatives like just, you know, come up, grow up and try and train or teach and educate people about what's happening in our societies.
This episode of The Progressive Bitcoiner is brought to you by Zeus. Zeus is a self-custodial Bitcoin wallet for Android and iOS. The app features a built-in Lightning node that allows you to take full control of how you make payments on-chain and on Lightning. You can easily onboard to the Lightning network and let Zeus's Lightning service provider, Olympus, do all the heavy lifting for you. Or you can get more hands-on and curate your own Lightning channels with whoever you transact with most. Zeus has best-in-class privacy and allows you to have great peace of mind when sending and receiving Lightning payments. Not only does the Zeus team not want to know how you're using your money, but they're building things in a way that they can't know. There's also a first-of-its-kind Lightning address that will allow you to receive payments 24/7 to your mobile wallet self-custodially. This is a great solution for a range of people, for those who just want to have the technical ability to set up their own infrastructure, to nomads and dissidents that need to accept donations on the move. Other Lightning wallets don't give the users this level of control. In fact, many of them operate more like bank accounts that can be revoked and ultimately lead to you losing your money. With Zeus, you're in full control of your private keys and therefore can start to take full control of your financial destiny. To learn more and to learn where to download, head to zeusln.com.
And I think, you know, one of the things we touched on a little while ago that I wanted to get back to, you know, folks hear a lot of different stories about one of the things that people who are against Bitcoin, let's say kind of like a white liberal elite, Ivy Leaguer, you know, whatever, like an intellectual coming at Bitcoin, kind of the stereotypes. One will say, well, you know, if you're working with, not even necessarily in like city centers in Kenya, but let's say like a rural village somewhere in Nairobi, in El Salvador, like people that they're like, okay, some folks don't have a lot of savings. So you telling them to get into Bitcoin, like they already don't have a lot of savings. You're just, you know, it's promoting a scam. It's ripping people off. Like, what if the price fluctuates like dramatically? Like these people aren't prepared for that. You're doing a disservice to these people by telling them to invest in Bitcoin or get involved with Bitcoin. What would you say to people like that in terms of Bitcoin and the way you all approach education around Bitcoin, for whether it's, you know, for some people who come in and they have savings and they want to, you know, create a better store of value, or some people who don't have savings but still want to learn about Bitcoin? Like, how do you approach those people who say that criticism, I guess?
Okay, so there's so many ways to answer this question or to look at this particular issue. Is for me, one, I don't educate people on how they can save in Bitcoin and become millionaires or billionaires overnight, right? I don't look at it from an angle of investment. I look at mm-hmm. it more as an angle of peer-to-peer system. The other thing I would say or try and educate such kind of people is the volatility that we see on Bitcoin is mostly tied to the volatility or the depreciation or the devaluation of our currencies, right? So if you take Bitcoin as one Bitcoin is equals to one Bitcoin, then that will not really bother you as much, right? And this is the reason why we need more businesses onboarded. We need more people to start using Bitcoin. Then we will not have to worry about the price of Bitcoin going down or the price of mm-hmm. Bitcoin going up. Because again, the white paper clearly states that Bitcoin was created as a peer-to-peer system. Mm-hmm. It was not created like an asset where people can invest. Well, you can do that for now because we don't have like the demand for it is not really that much. So we have mm-hmm. a few individuals who are actually manipulating, of course, the markets, right?
Yeah.
Because they have the biggest share. But if we look at it from the point of view that we are onboarding people to start using, you know, to start from escaping the current monetary system and start using Bitcoin as the medium of exchange, then we will not have to worry about how much the Bitcoin price has gone down or it has gone up. Mm-hmm. So that's what I can say. And yeah. I would also say our fiat is it's the biggest scam that it's out there. Because if you look at whether it's the dollar, whether it's any other African fiat currency, they have all depreciated, you know. So we've all lost time. We've all lost resources. So you can't really say that Bitcoin is like telling people to use Bitcoin is like selling them to a scam.
Yeah,
I believe encouraging people to use fiat, now that's the biggest scam. You're encouraging people to give their money to people who do not care about them at all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's urging people to come out of a scam, it's worldview or currency. And I mean, what's interesting about the things you're saying, and even especially currency devaluation, do you get a, like, I know in general, it's kind of everywhere. Like you said, you'll have people in your network or community that you're working in that might think Bitcoin is a scam, or might think, oh, it's too volatile. This and like similar thoughts that anyone in any nation may deal with at varying levels. But do you feel like folks are able to get it a little bit quicker or easier if you start describing like the currency devaluation or things? I feel like there's more things on the surface because some folks in the West, you know, check your financial privilege. Like we're not dealing with that level of inflation in the States. Like, yes, it was quite dramatic. And I think for some people, there's an argument there already in the States. It's like, hey, look, similar to us, look, since 2021, do you really think inflation was only X number, right? And, you know, the rhetoric is pretending that those prices are going back down to what it was. No, they've permanently gone up like 20%. Now they're slowly going up only 2-3% now from there. So in the US, there's already an argument. But do you feel like folks you're working with, it's that argument is a little more present and immediate for like the currency devaluation and things like that?
Because you're already giving them a solution to problems that they have. You're not trying to create problems that they don't go through.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Again, the inflation, you know, not having access to the traditional banking systems, you know, the high fees. So someone wants to send money or pay fees for their child who is in States. They have to go through all that. You know, by the time they actually do that, the stress they have and are gone through, whether it's through the fees, whether it's through the time that it gets to the school, you know, all that. So when you introduce someone like that, or so when someone like that comes across a tool like Bitcoin, that it becomes easier for them to actually understand why Bitcoin, as opposed to someone who has everything set out for them, right?
Yeah.
I would say we have so many challenges from, you know, the fees, the systems being slow, to lack of proper access to these institutions, you know, to lack of credit and all that, anything that you can think of. We have experienced that challenge, you know. Mm-hmm. So it makes it easier for us as educators in Africa to actually orange peel. I don't like to use that word, but I would say orange peel someone. It makes it easier because, again, they already have seen the challenges, and back at the back of their minds, they're looking for a solution, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
For the majority, they'll be like, okay, so maybe this. They might not immediately get it, but at the back of their mind, they'll be like, okay, let me be a little bit more open-minded and just listen to what they have to say.
Yeah.
So from that point of view, like from that journey, you know, again, I normally say orange peeling a person takes time. It's a journey. Mm-hmm. I don't do it in one day, neither do I do it in a month. For me, it's a journey. It's something that you have to be patient with, because you're taking someone from a scam, like you said, to actually something that's legit. So for the majority of people, they need time to actually understand how it works. So yeah. I would say the challenges are a silver lining for us as educators.
Yeah, it's hard to talk to people about a solution, like you said, if they don't see a problem in the first place. Mm-hmm. Like you said, you're literally creating a problem in someone's mind. I feel very, I mean, different context, right? But in terms of like orange pilling, I'd say there's some people that are like, would be better at orange pilling than me. Because I think a little bit is like, sometimes I worry, do I come across as trying to sell a a cult to someone, right? Or trying to sell like a, does it sound scammy if I'm talking about it in XYZ way? For mm-hmm. me, I kind of like presenting things, doing this podcast, writing articles, and then people can access it when they're ready in that context. But then some people are very, very, very good about going out, talking to people on the street, going to meetups and talking in that regard. So I think everyone has like a different approach to doing this, and all are valid mm-hmm. in different ways. But yeah, that's one of my things, is I'm in a very, very, you know, liberal progressive pocket. Some people have viewed it as very, very detrimental to the environment, all of these things. So always in the back of my mind is those arguments in terms of, okay, these are what people are thinking when I'm talking and say Bitcoin. That's why some of my favorite stories are when you're talking and you don't say Bitcoin until like maybe the next day, or maybe 10, 15 minutes later into that conversation, you're talking about, here's the problem. Because if Bitcoin is just this thing, it's just this asset that people want to get rich on, sure, some people in Wall Street are trying to do that right now. But a lot of us came to Bitcoin, and I got into Bitcoin because I felt like there was a problem to begin with. I'm like, our politics are not answering it. Our, you know, the gap between the rich and the poor continue to grow. There's got to be something else here. So I think that's a really important first step that people need to make, like you're saying, is like, they have to see a problem. And I think it's really hard to talk about Bitcoin if someone's worldview or someone's position in the world is really great, because they're probably benefiting from the current system. And Bitcoin is like, trying to be very upfront about it, Bitcoin is trying to upend that current system. So if you've been benefiting from, you know, manipulating the money, or benefiting from your stocks that benefit from inflation because asset prices go through the roof when inflation comes into play, you might not like Bitcoin that much. I'm not sure.
Absolutely. I would say it's very important to meet people at their level. People experience the world on different levels, right? Mm-hmm. So if you're trying to arrange pill someone, where exactly are they coming from, right? Where exactly are they coming from? What exactly are they experiencing? Are they coming from the West where everything is well and good? Then sell it to them like a store of value, you know, another digital asset that would work for them. They might see the importance of that. Are you talking to somebody who has to deal with depreciation, devaluation of their currency? Then you want to show them like, this is the way out, right?
Yeah.
And the other thing that I would also add into this conversation is the Bitcoin ecosystem is huge. I believe it's still very early. We need all skills on board. Mm-hmm. So whether you're a tech person, whether you're good at education, whether you're good at podcasting, we need this. We need this here, right? Because I don't think we can all be educators. Then it would not make sense, because we still need builders. We still need podcasters to get their voices out there. We still need podcasters to get the information there, because some of us actually learned through YouTube videos, podcasts, and all that. So we need everybody. We need artists as well. Whether it's musicians, whether it's just painting, we need everybody onboarded into the Bitcoin ecosystem. Just the same way we have different skills in the fiat system, we need everybody on this other side as well. And I think with that, we can definitely see like 100%, probably not really 100%, but at least it will actually accelerate the Bitcoin adoption if we actually welcome everybody, every individual skill out there to come and actually join us in this journey.
Yeah, that's the way I view it too. I love thinking of it in that way. You know, because I talk to people, it almost comes up on almost every episode. It's like, is Bitcoin inevitable? Is it not? You know, what? And some people are like, it's inevitable. It doesn't matter. Some people are like, it's not inevitable. We need to do X, Y, Z. I almost view it as a time frame. Like, things can happen quicker if, like you mentioned, like bringing in everyone with their skill set to really rapidly increase the timeline of Bitcoin adoption, whatever that looks like, into varying degrees. Whereas if we kind of sit back and say, Bitcoin is the best tech, it's the best monetary system, people will come to it, and it's just inevitable without, you know, doing what I try to do, which is fight the FUD. Like, if someone on the left says something that's false, call it out. Like, find ways to call it out, find ways to organize and do that, right? Find ways to use Bitcoin. If you're a store owner and you're into Bitcoin, there's a lot of tools nowadays that didn't exist even a year ago, especially several years ago, that help make it easier for you to accept Bitcoin, for you to do your taxes and all of that through some software with Bitcoin. There's more and more ways. So yeah, I would encourage everyone listening, like, find ways that you can get involved with Bitcoin, whatever your skill set is, and find ways to use Bitcoin, like to send and spend, to donate to Bitcoin Dada, to, you know, just encourage communities, because that's super, super important. Like, everyone can do something to benefit Bitcoin. Absolutely.
Absolutely. Everyone can. And you're talking, and I was just thinking about, so I give an example of Kenya. We've had corruption in most of the areas, and I would pick out the sports, you know, football and all that. And every year we have complaints from these guys, and they're always complaining there's no pay. You know, the government is actually, the government gives this money, yet it ends up in very few people, right? So you're looking at that, and you're looking at, if we actually accepted Bitcoin, if we were using Bitcoin, then it will cut off the intermediaries, you know, it will cut off the greedy leaders, it will cut off the coaches, the greedy coaches, because the money would come from one direct particular wallet to the guys on the ground. And like I said previously, everybody has a space, everybody has a spot in this ecosystem. So the sooner you find it, the better for you, and the better for us as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, I want to get into a little bit of the nuts and bolts of Bitcoin Dada. So for people to imagine, so day one, someone's hearing about Bitcoin Dada, someone shows up and says, okay, I'm here for this meetup, I'm here for the diploma program, I'm here. What are some of the things you all do in terms of education? And what does that look like for someone that goes from like zero to, you know, a decent understanding of Bitcoin and its values and properties?
Okay. So first of all, I would say Bitcoin Dada is fully female based, right? So that means our students are all female. We have online classes every Tuesdays and Thursdays. So the program takes about 6 to 8 weeks, depending on the activities within the that particular course. We also have workshops and events in between. So the workshops and the events are open to all genders. So we do not discriminate with the physical events and workshops. However, we do give priority to females. So if it's a case of 50-50 attendance, then that's okay. Or sometimes we have 70-30%, but the majority should be females, right? The ladies go through, after they have the exams, they do the exams, and then they actually get to graduate. We have introduced a mentorship program where we help them sharpen their skills. And now we trying to place them in different Bitcoin organizations as well as the tech space, because I'm saying the tech space because not every Bitcoin company is hiring, right? So we've actually introduced tech companies as well. So that said, we have tried, or we are trying to expand to other African countries physically. Of course, we are everywhere online. We are in Kenya, Uganda, Nigeria, South Africa, Ghana, Cameroon, and Namibia. But physically, we are just in Kenya and Uganda. So Uganda was the first country to actually have, we have expanded into. And we did that like a month ago. Right. So we launched Bitcoin Dada in Uganda about a month ago, which was very exciting to me, because what I'm trying to do is duplicate myself into other females, into other African females out there. So that and one of the reasons why I'm doing this is because every country, every African country has its own challenges, you know, and it has its own way that it works. So I feel if we have leaders who can actually come up from those particular countries, then they can know how best to utilize Bitcoin, or how best they can create or use our course outline as well, or how best they can make the community feel at home, you know. So basically that is it. We are looking to expand, you know, our outreach to more females as well. Like I said, we have a huge population of African females, and if we can get even just half of it, then I think as Bitcoiners, we'll be going in the right direction. We are also collaborating with universities. So far we have done four. So we are going on to the fifth one. We will have an event next coming weekend at a university. So the reason why we do this is we feel with the already existing knowledge that we have now, it's up to us, or it's upon us, to actually take the next step and try and orange peel, or try and share the knowledge with other people in the society. And who best to share the same information other than the youth, who are the students, right? Yeah. So that's what we've been doing. And we are hoping to, you know, reach out to all the universities in Kenya by the end of this year, you know, and probably just grow to other countries as well. So it's not just really about African females, but it's how as African females can also help in this revolution that's happening worldwide.
Hi, everyone. Hope you're enjoying the episode. Today's episode is brought to you by Bitbox. Now, Bitbox is a hardware wallet that's open source, incredibly secure and easy to use, and it's what I'm using to safely secure my Bitcoin in cold storage. Now, I know self-custodying Bitcoin can really be intimidating, but Bitbox is designed for ease of use without compromising on security. It's USB-C compatible and allows you to easily back up and restore your private keys with a micro SD card, which is really cool. Now, you can purchase the Bitbox using the promo code TPB at the link found in the show notes for 5% off your purchase. And I really want to thank Bitbox for their support of the podcast, and I'm really excited about this new partnership. All right, I'll let you get back to the episode now.
Yeah, absolutely. And what has been the strength of doing this as like a grassroots local movement? I'm sure there might be, you know, there's obviously challenges as well with any of this, but what do you feel are some of the strengths of doing this from starting in your community with local women? Doesn't sound like a lot of outside corporate or international pressure on any groups or, you know, to do this or that, or what do you think has been the strength of focusing and expanding in that way?
The strength in what way? Is it on my end, like why I do it, or?
Yeah, I would say like local community. And you mentioned too, taking kind of the vision of what you're doing, going to Uganda and then working with people specifically there, because their context is going to be different than even your context and what you're working. So where is the strength in, and what does that look like at the local community level? Because what I'm hearing you saying and what I've seen of Bitcoin Dada is like, you're taking these ideas and concepts, but then, you know, locations are running with them. And then kind of like, your vision sounds like it would expand and continue expanding in such a local way. Like, it's not you coming in and saying, do it exactly this way, in this way, and these are your partners. It's like, here's kind of the layout, here's maybe a diploma program, here's how we do the meetups, but then take and localize it. Like, everything you've done seems very like local. It's not like a international aid run nonprofit or something like that, kind of a stereotypical approach from the West to Africa in a lot of ways, honestly. So what are some of the strengths with doing it with, you know, local people, local women, first and foremost?
I think, I don't know if you saw that message, but it said there's an issue with communication. Did you see it?
No, it might just be on your end.
I hope I've marked it
just on my end, so that you're getting a little blurry on my end, but it's still recording locally. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, I can hear you. Like on my end, I can hear you well.
Okay. Now we're good then. Yeah.
Okay. So I would say my biggest strength is having a team of females or a community that actually has started to see or open their eyes to, again, the adversaries that have been happening, you know. So again, they really want to change what has been happening for centuries, you know, from generation to generation. So we're introducing them into, or we're giving them a solution to actually change their lives, change the, how the communities are set up, or change some of their beliefs, you know. And I've seen a lot of women, from my organization say like, hey, you know what? This is actually going to revolutionize how Africa is set, you know? So I think that's my biggest strength, you know? Mm.
Yeah, that's, gosh, it goes back to the earlier point we were talking about where like this sets, okay, Africa on a different path. This sets, if you have more like gender inclusion on these things, like there's less strain on resources. There's more opportunities and economic mobility and all of these things. It's not so reliant on, you know, this one person in this community or family. Bringing in that inclusivity, I think, is really, really big. And not any inclusivity for inclusivity's sake, but because these people have typically not been a part of, like you're saying, women in communities have not typically been a part of any economic or financial, whether it's jobs, decisions, any of that, and leading that forward through Bitcoin in a way that's not accessible in the current fiat economic system is really, really incredible. Like Bitcoin is significantly more inclusive because there's no barrier to entry compared to other type of, you know, fiat institutions, whether it's certain degrees or you have to have a certain net worth to invest in XYZ or a certain credit score, whatever that looks like to buy XYZ. Bitcoin is fully, fully, fully inclusive. So again, that's what frustrates me about people that are really keen on social movement, social mobility, like anti-poverty work, not seeing Bitcoin as like the most inclusive opportunity or answer, and still trying to work on that type of work through the traditional banking fiat system. It makes no sense to me now at this point in the journey. It's like that makes no sense at all. And that's what I think frustrates me. Like we were talking about, I think I went a little too easy on it saying, okay, if people don't want to use it, that's fine. But I'm like, if you were engaged in wanting to see the world a better place for struggling people, for a marginalized group in the States, for wherever communities you're talking about, and Bitcoin, you just automatically turn off when someone says Bitcoin, do you really care about finding solutions? Or do you care more about an ideological belief that, oh, I heard Bitcoin is XYZ, so no thanks. That really frustrates me. Like, are you solutions oriented or are you just ideological? And I think getting past that is really important for people to think about.
Mm-hmm. And you can imagine how one thing I would say about Bitcoin, again, it levels the playing field for everybody, right? So you're looking at someone who's been struggling, whether it's male or female, who's been struggling to, you know, live on a day-to-day basis. And it's the same person that you expect maybe to buy property or, you know, or buy stocks and shares and all that. Mm-hmm. And with Bitcoin, it's beautiful because even with the little that you earn, should you decide, you know what, as a man or as a woman, I want to leave my kids some form of, you know, inheritance. You can start with Bitcoin and you can start with the lowest amount you are able. You can start with $1, you can start $2 and just work your way up, you know. Mm-hmm. And you cannot do this with land. You cannot go and say, I'll buy this. I just buy the grass today and then tomorrow I'll buy, you know, the land itself, you know. But Bitcoin, actually, it equalizes, you know, this playing field. So whether you're coming from high end, whether you're middle class, whether you're just really somebody from the village, you know, you can plan yourself, especially the financial literacy that you're actually providing. You can actually decide with the fiat that's coming in, what gets into the daily expenditure and how much can I actually leave aside to actually buy some sats. And that's the beauty about Bitcoin. So it gives people hope that someday things can change for me, right? Whether it's through maybe using Bitcoin as a medium of exchange, whether it's using it as a store of value, you know, regardless of how you use it.
Yeah. Now, another thing I wanted to make sure to talk about is what are some, not only challenges to adoption, but some ways that the tools are starting to get better with Bitcoin, but would still be beneficial. I mean, one thing on a lot of people's mind in Bitcoin is using Bitcoin on in a high fee environment. So you talked about, you know, working peer to peer, like actually using and spending sats, not just a store of value. Because if for some people it's a store of value, the fees don't matter as much. If they just want to store it like gold in a vault and not touch it until they're retired or something, sure, okay, fees don't matter. But for some people, if they're trying to interact with Bitcoin on the base layer and fees are, you know, $20, let's say, or something. You know, and I think right now at this recording, it's back lower, but you know, the more people using Bitcoin, the more institutions moving large sums of money in Bitcoin, the higher those fees are, because you're going to have more transactions trying to get in on those blocks every 10 minutes. So for you, what are some of the ways that, you know, whether it's tools you all are specifically using, like what are some ways the tools have been working for that? And what are some ways that you're hoping as time goes on, the next year or two, tools continue to get better? Does that make sense? So it's kind of like a, I view it as almost a barrier to adoption, but also what are the ways that we can use Bitcoin as it's intended? As you, I like to say, it was intended that way. Some people might, you know, say Bitcoin is whatever you want it to be. But I think if Bitcoin's not working in a peer-to-peer way, or there's not tools there, we need to, we got work to do.
Also, the Lightning Network has really made sort of adoption of Bitcoin in Africa a little bit better for us. And I would pick out an innovation by Kogato of Machankura. So Machankura essentially is a custodial wallet that helps people transfer value from one person to the other without the need of the internet, right? So it's based on the Lightning Network, so meaning transactions are cheap. So when you're looking at this and you're looking at an organization such as Bitcoin Dada, where we are trying to onboard everybody, so we do it in the urban centers, we do it in the rural areas. So with a product such as Machankura, it actually makes it easier. So I don't have to worry about that woman who is back at the village who probably doesn't have electricity for the last 5 days, who doesn't have a smartphone, you know. With Machankura, what they need is just like a feature phone. And in Africa, feature phones are quite common and quite popular. So I'll definitely give a shout out to Kogato and what he has been able to create for the African continent. And we need more such tools. We need more such products to for the African users.
Yeah. And this is the one, I think it was featured in Forbes as well recently, the Forbes Crypto, the digital asset. I'll be sure to link that article. I linked it in our newsletter through the Progressive Bitcoiner, but I'll put it in the show notes as well, because that's a really cool thing. I mean, that was so cool that I like mentioned it to my wife. So I try to like save what I mentioned about Bitcoin, because I talk so much about it all the time. But I'm like, this is like, I get really excited when I'm like, this is a really practical tool that like can really work. Like, you're not reliant on internet connection. It's like, you know, I kind of associate it with like a prepaid, you know, card or prepaid phone that someone would use. Well, nowadays your cell phone has better international plans or whatever. But back in the day, you'd have to go to some, you know, you'd have to go to a convenience store, pick up some prepaid card to make phone calls, that kind of thing. So just using that as a parallel to Bitcoin and telling people, oh yeah, people can use it in that way. That's a good argument against people saying, well, what if they don't have electricity or internet or a smartphone or this and that? Yeah, they don't need it. Like Bitcoin can work over radio waves.
They don't, absolutely. And it also works for students, because that is one thing that we actually surprised. So we went into a university, that was last year, and surprisingly, they had already heard about cryptocurrencies. Well, no, it's not really surprising, because that's Generation Z, so they actually know almost everything. So the challenge that they faced, most of them, was actually internet. You know, they don't have data, so it's a problem actually getting into the space, you know, and start transacting. So when you introduce them to Machankura, they were so amazed, they were so grateful that they such a product actually exists.
Yeah, I can imagine. That's really interesting. What I like about Bitcoin, and especially Bitcoin development and tools, is that because it's this open protocol, because there's no barrier to entry, if there is a problem in Bitcoin, typically the only problem is we just need more and more people working on it, because it's always like the problem will be addressed. Like you said, someone doesn't have internet access. Okay. I'm sure there's so many other problems, and I've heard this from Lightning devs as well, that, okay, there's a problem with this bug in Lightning. We're going to get to it. It's just a matter of timing, and there's only so many people working on it, but with mm-hmm. Bitcoin, it's almost like if you see a problem and you don't have an answer to it, in a couple of years, someone will probably have found a way to address that using Bitcoin, right? And that's mm-hmm. one of those features. So that's what's really cool about Bitcoin, because some technologies or some other things, it's just like, oh, that just won't ever be a thing with our tech yeah. or what we're working on. With Bitcoin, yeah. people have been, I don't want to overstate, you know, it's not one of those things that like Bitcoin fixes everything, but in terms of Bitcoin's tech, and if there's like a, oh, Bitcoin will never be adopted here because of X, well, the second you say that, be careful, because in a couple of years' time, they'll probably be using it in a way that you didn't even imagine. And that's one of the coolest mm-hmm. things about Bitcoin, is that it's truly, it's not a Western development. It's not a Kenyan development. It will find its way into every single pocket of our planet and people using it, because it is the best. And if we keep pushing forward with that, that's one of the coolest things. Like, it's truly, truly universal in that way. It's one of the most global things we've seen, period. That's what I'm most excited about. I would not be as excited if it was just reserved for Wall Street in the US. Like, that's awful.
I mean, like you said, we just need more people, you know, working in the Bitcoin ecosystem. You know, whatever problem that you're seeing, find a solution to it and work on it. You know, that's the only thing that we can do. Whether you're an artist, even a politician, you know, with good interest, then, you know, join the space. Let it work for your people, you know. Whether you're a feminist, join the space. Mm-hmm. Have it work for your community. Whether you're a dev, join the space. Build, you know. There's so many angles to how you can use Bitcoin and how it can help us as humans on this planet.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, speaking of helping, if folks are listening to you and they're like, wow, I want to help Bitcoin Dada. I want to do everything I can. Obviously, I want to encourage people to donate sats to support there financially. And we'll make sure to have the links and everything in the show notes for people to do so. But what are other ways folks can, you know, get involved, get in touch? What are some of the things you're looking for?
Okay. So of course the biggest one would be funding, because, you know, going from one community to the next is not cheap, right? Yeah. And Bitcoin Dada is a nonprofit initiative. So that means we depend on donations from well-wishers. So we do have our funding page on our website, which is btcdada.com. That would be great. If you can donate books as well, whether it's financial related material or just Bitcoin books, that is amazing as well, because we just started like a library section where the females get to borrow the books and return them. So it's sort of like a Bitcoin Dada library to help with the education as well, because we cannot teach them everything, right? If you're a good educator, you can volunteer to tutor us as well. So that is one thing that I've really appreciated the larger Bitcoin community that has come through for us. So if you're good at tutoring, then please feel free to reach out to me either on my personal account, which is Marcel Lorraine, or our Twitter account, BTC_Dada, you know, and then we'll definitely schedule a time slot for you. If you just want to come and encourage the ladies as well, feel free, again, just reach out to us as well and do the same. The last one I would say, engagement on our social media handles to get to as many people as possible who can help us in one way or another, or even just get to the large African, you know, continent. That would be great.
Yeah, and you all are very engaged and very active on social media. So, you know, give them a follow. It's so fun to follow along and do a great job of showcasing what's going on. And it's just something that'll like brighten your timeline. Like if you're scrolling on X or whatever, like they have an Instagram, they have like you all are very, very active. I mean, your marketing and events background, you're killing it there anyway. That's going to be obvious. Well, Marcel, is there anything we didn't touch on that you wanted to make sure to touch on?
Not that I can think of. No.
I'll let you get back to your, you know, busy life over there doing awesome stuff. thank you so much for this conversation and for chatting. And everyone, please check out their website. It's btcdada.com. Is that what you said?
Yes.
Great. BTC I'll say it here because some people do not go to the show notes, even though I say go to the show notes and check out these links. So btcdada.com. please donate if you can. They could really use your support to keep expanding their mission, one of the most important missions in Bitcoin, I think, and give them a follow. But Marcel, thank you so much for doing this. We'll have to do this again soon. We'll talk to you later.
Thank you for having me. And thank you for sharing African females' voices out there.
Absolutely.